I became aware of Bishop Gary Gordon from others who worked with him, either during his time as the Bishop of Whitehorse in the Yukon from 2006 to 2014, or as the Bishop of Victoria in British Columbia, where he's been since 2014. "This is not your usual bishop," each person tried to convey to me. "He has a huge heart. He'll go anywhere, reach out to anyone." For many years now, Bishop Gary has been the link between the Canadian Catholic Bishops Conference and the Interfaith Committee on Chaplaincy with the Correctional Services of Canada. He has a long and deep relationship with the First Nations people and is most proud of the name he was gifted with by the Stalo people in 2006. Hayothmatuk, meaning taking care of the people. Bishop Gary's episcopal crest with its salmon in the middle speaks to his ongoing commitment to the part of the world he has now long called home, and also quite possibly his abiding love for fishing. When you hear him speak, you'll hear him reference Tasso, his favorite fishing haunt, and you'll understand why people near and far talk about his approachable style of ministry leadership. So one of the things which got me started thinking about this in the first place is because when I keep hearing people talk about power or power imbalance, power is not something that myself I naturally associate with myself. Like, I don't think of myself as necessarily a person of power, but even just in becoming a teacher and especially at the graduate level, I became aware of the fact, like, I keep thinking that I'm David fighting Goliath. Like, I'm the little person here.
That's what you said in your question.
And I came to realize that other people don't think of me that way. Like, they see me as a person who has power. And I'm wondering if in your own life, there was kind of a wake up moment like that for you too, where you saw all of a sudden, like, oh, people really think I have a lot of power here. Maybe I don't feel like I do, but I'm being perceived in that way.
I think that's true for everybody. When a mom and dad become a mom and dad, they all of a sudden experience a situation of power, even though they would not have experienced that or even thought about it beforehand.
So when you say the word power, even in the sentences that you're using it right now, how are you understanding that term? Like, what does that word mean to you? What comes to your mind when you think about that term?
Responsibility.
How do you monitor your own exercise of power to make sure that you don't become Goliath in the story?
Keep the authority in check. Yeah, I think Jesus had to watch this question of authority and therefore power. And as he would heal somebody or feed 5,000 people, and people around him would want to come and get him, make him king. See, that's one of the difficulties with any kind of what I call serious responsibility is even our closest friends and even our families and the people around us will want to corrupt that responsibility for their own gain. And so Jesus had a way of taking care of that by disappearing. Every time he did a big miracle or a bunch of miracles in a town or fed 5,000 people, they'd have to go look for him because he would go into hiding. And he was very good at disappearing.
You know, you're mentioning that.
Well, that's how I do it. I disappear. But you have to be intentional about disappearing. Because we're all wounded by, well, let's say the wounded ego wants to surface. So you just have to be conscious of that.
When you disappear, what do you do?
Well, instead of making a grand exit at an event, a wedding, a funeral, you just slip out a side door so that nobody notices. You just have to be consciously trying to fight against the inclination to be noticed. You just have to do that. Everybody has to do that.
Are there other people
to you who serve as models for that, that you're like, this person really was someone who I take as kind of a model in my own life of, you know, someone who seems to have carried the responsibility well and did the best they could with it?
The old Indigenous leaders that I've known, the old ones, you know, these are, you know, great heroes of the faith that mm-hmm. we can resonate with. Yeah.
What about power have you learned from them and responsibility?
One of the things that was told to me is that it was always the chief who dug the graves, not the laborer or the poorest or the weakest person, but it was the leader who did that, the most difficult job in a community. So those were the old leaders, the old ones, who were respected because they did the dirty jobs.
And for you, especially the image of digging the graves, was it significant because they were the ones, it was the hardest physical labor, or was because of the grief involved in digging the?
Yeah, the grief, the suffering, the bearing with, the bearing for, the caring of. Yeah, at least that's my experience from days gone by. The traditional leaders had authority or responsibility not by virtue of office or education, but had been trained this way, and it was all about service.
When I say the word power, and immediately you move to the word responsibility, there's an old line in the, you know, I think it comes from Spider-Man or something like that. With great power comes great responsibility. But the power.
Yeah, well, that's why I've been using the word responsibility.
Yeah, with great power comes great responsibility. But that responsibility, taking responsibility, is the way of exercising power well. Like that, but there's it's possible that you could have great power and not take responsibility, right? Is that, would you?
Yeah, we call that World War III.
Yeah. You don't take responsibility for your actions. Yeah, because the power itself is what makes your actions speak so loudly. It magnifies the impact.
Well, that's right. And everything we do is an exercise of power, except for the involuntary fact that our heart beats and our breath goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a decision. Even my words. So my words are coming out, you're recording them. But when I say a word, it's causing a shock in the air, causing a profound ripple, a sound wave. And I can use my words, my language, in a non-violent way, or I can use it in a violent way, and I can use it with tonalities that are the exercise of good responsibility, therefore power, or I can shout. So I can either throw a pebble in the pond knowing that the ripples will hit the other side, or I can throw an asteroid in the pond and obliterate everything. I think St. James has something to say about that.
About his words?
Yeah, words matter, the tongue.
The reading that I'm doing, one of the most helpful books I've read so far is, there's a book called Power, a User's Guide, I think it was, by a woman named Julie Diamond. She's not in the church world, but what she said resonated with me in this regard, that she says there are certain behaviors, people who don't have power, there are certain behaviors that oftentimes are associated with not having power. People who do have power, there are certain behaviors associated with people who experience themselves. It's not even whether they have it or not, it's whether they experience themselves as having power. So a lot of times people who experience themselves as having power behave like they're generous, they can be magnanimous. People who feel like they don't have any power is oftentimes when we're the most grasping or the most desperate, you know, or we are most agitated. But she kind of makes the point that the greatest danger is for people who actually do have a lot of power, but experience themselves as powerless, like see themselves as powerless.
Oh yeah, because then they're in chaos.
Hmm.
they can cause a lot of harm to other people. And they don't even know it.
Right. Yeah.
Like a bull in a china shop.
And I imagine as you've worked with, you know, guys who are first becoming pastors or even first becoming priests, you know, or so forth, that sometimes I think we're not always aware of the impact of the words that we have. Like we think of ourselves like, oh, I'm just another person in the room just sharing my opinion about this. But it lands more like an asteroid in the pond than it does in the pond.
Absolutely. And you don't really come to an awareness of that without significantly hurting people along the way, not even intentionally. Mm-hmm. You don't even know, even with a glance, even with a furrowed brow or a non-furrowed brow, because of the perception that others have of you, of your responsibility, authority, power. So you know what? I don't think anything but time and getting the edges roughed off will make you aware. It really is, because you're just not aware. And I don't think you can be educated to be aware. I think you just gotta experience somebody having the ruthless honesty to tell you that you're an idiot. I think husbands and wives do that for each other quite well.
And I think, I do think we do. And I think because you feel safe in that relationship to say to each other, and you know the other person that well. One of the things that I think some people who are in positions of power and responsibility, if they don't have somebody like that, and if people are afraid to speak up because of in their own mind, like even though you're like, they could totally be safe to tell me anything, but in their own mind, they're nervous about the power differential.
Absolutely.
Do you find, I mean, people have often said to me that being a bishop is one of the loneliest jobs in the world in that regard, because you're not ever really sure, are you getting honesty from people?
Well, I was told by a very elderly senior archbishop who's deceased now, but you know, 15 years, 16 years ago at my first plenary, Archbishop McDonald, he was just about to retire. So he was 75, you know, then. Mm-hmm. He said, well, there's two things you can count on, Gary. Number one, no one will ever tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. And number two, you will never have a bad meal, which is pretty much the truth. So we have to be extremely intentional about de-escalating our footprint. You know, even my close, just to share the story, even my closest friend who was a priest, and we had gone fishing together every summer for 30 years, 35 years. But he was on one side of the country, I was on the other. But we had this communication that was ongoing. You know, what are you preaching about this week? Mm-hmm. Gee, what should I do here? So we're both pastors, you know, but we used to go fishing. So when I got named a bishop, I had to be phenomenally intentional about de-escalating this idea of bishop in his head. And yet he could have just as well have been named a bishop at some point too. He didn't live long enough, but because he was brilliant, he spoke, you know, four languages, had a couple of master's degrees, was a phenomenal pastor, worked for the Correctional Service of Canada at a very high level. And when I needed help on anything technological or intellectual, I phoned him. But when I got made a bishop, I thought, well, I guess he doesn't want to be my friend anymore. He had a real struggle with the differential of power, his own perception of it. And then my own sense of, well, I don't know, I still put my pants on the same way and I still fish the same way. What's the problem? So I had to be very, very intentional for about 2 years until he was actually comfortable with me again. Isn't that something?
Yeah, I can entirely see how that could happen.
Yeah.
So when you say you were really intentional about it, what are ways that you as bishop go about trying to make sure that you're getting the feedback you need in order to learn and grow and to understand what's really going on.
Well, that's something that I still need to get better at, asking better questions. Yeah, it's really about how to be able to frame the questions better so that it opens the door rather than shuts the door. I think we all have that power through our questions. You talk about that in terms of inference and all of that in, you know, redeeming conflict. That would be a huge growth area for me if I could be much better at asking the questions. But on the other hand, I'm pretty good at being de-escalated in the presence of people, mm-hmm. so they actually can get to be quite free.
Mm-hmm. I've observed that. That's part of the reason I wanted to interview you.
Yeah, so
in that regard.
And I think it's just quite natural that I won't ask anybody to do anything that I won't do myself. And I intentionally have calluses on my hands. I'm quite willing to accept help, even though I'm pretty ruggedly individual, but I can certainly admit that there's many things that I can't do. So I guess, and you know, even in the face of difficult questions, I never had a big problem with saying I don't know. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, I think a lot of I don't knows in the right place at the right time can certainly create openness. And it's not false. I just don't know. Mediocrity in some things is actually a real blessing. So I guess that's how I've really worked at trying to de-escalate. You know, even when I go up to Tassus, I mean, there might be two or three Catholics that I know are Catholic. And, you know, the rest of the guides, I mean, they're all nice people and everything. They don't have any difficulty relating with me or so forth. And that's just because for 8 years, I've been intentionally invisible, mm-hmm. and simply garnered a sense of respect, not because I'm a bishop, the guy with the pointy hat and all this other church malarkey, but the fact that I'm actually a good fisherman. So you only garner respect not by office, but by what you do. So I think that's pretty important.
One of the other people who I've interviewed talked a little bit about that in each, what she would call a community of practice, and fishing would be a community of practice, like people who have, that it's figuring out each different community has different things that it values highly. And that the main way that you influence is by being what within that community has a lot of value. So, I mean, in Tassus, probably being a really good fisherman carries more value and creates more influence among the people than being bishop.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. Here in Victoria, nobody cares that I go fishing.
Right. And so it doesn't have as much weight here. It doesn't bond people in the same way that it does. But in Tassus, it matters a lot.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very astute observation of your other person.
When she was saying that, I was like, oh, that's really interesting, because the way that she talked about, she works in education, but one of the ways that she increases her capacity to influence situations is to find out what is most highly valued in this particular community. And then how do I get that? So she had pursued an advance. She was trying to work on with scientists, and she found out scientists really having a particular degree matters a lot to them. So she went and got a whole other degree in biology just so that she could impact the way that scientists were doing teaching, which I thought was really, and you've done the same thing in Tassus, right? You have really, well, you love fishing too.
Yeah. And I like it too, but in a lot of other places too, you know, mm-hmm. like in indigenous communities, becoming familiar and understanding and deeply respecting and acknowledging all the ceremonies in the longhouse. I mean, that wasn't just about being a looky-loo and an anthropologist. That was about the ability to be able to really build a real relationships for the, you know, real relationships for the kingdom. And I mean, and where I was, it was a dairy farming area. I made it my raison d'etre to know everything I could know about dairy farming, old, new, and future. It really helps. You know, when you're a baseball player and you walk into Shea Stadium or any other stadium for that matter, and you're a batter, you know the field in which you're playing so that you can actually hit the ball out of the park.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, anngarrido.com. I'd especially encourage you to listen to the interview I did with Dr. Elizabeth Uni Burks that I referenced in this interview with Bishop Gary regarding communities of practice. I think you'd love it. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you this week as you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader God's called you to be in the world.